Good Friday afternoon and welcome to Eagle FM. Thank you for tuning in wherever you are tuned in from. You know how we do it here on Eagle FM every Friday. That is from 4 to 4:30, which, you know, speaking of which, I think we are 13 minutes into the Witani Childline radio program in collaboration with Lifeline Childline. And just like we have done with the past two Fridays, we usually have two representatives to bring us something educational, whether it's tech related or health related or whatever subject they have on the program. And similarly today we have also two. Usually, look, I'm now used to saying we have two ladies in the studio. Now we have a lady and a gentleman. So we have Bartlett Mazila and Jordyn Engelbrecht. Did I pronounce your name right?
Engelbrecht.
Yeah. Jesus, don't murder me. Now, these are the two Witani Childline radio program representative that we have in the studio today here at Eagle FM, wherever you tuned in from. Thank you for tuning in. And good afternoon.
And welcome everyone to Witani Childline Radio in collaboration with Eagle FM. It's your girl Jordyn here, and today we will be discussing healthy versus unhealthy foods. The person who will be joining me today is none other than my fellow radio presenter, Alex.
Hi guys. As we unwrap this topic, we'll be making sure to ask questions at the end of the discussion to make sure that all listeners understand what the topic is about.
Before we begin, a reminder to all our listeners, if you need someone to talk to or need counseling support, please remember to contact the toll-free counseling numbers 106 or 116. So, what is meant by healthy food? Healthy food is food that provides the nutrients your body needs to grow, stay active, and remain healthy. It contains vitamins, minerals, protein, healthy fats, fiber, and carbohydrates in the right amounts.
Some examples are fruits, vegetables, whole grains, fish, beans, and many more.
So those are some examples of healthy food. I even forgot some of those.
Some of them also just come into my head. But the benefits of healthy foods are they give your body energy, help you grow and develop, strengthen your immune system, and lower the risk of many diseases.
So those are some of the benefits of healthy food. We will be right back after this short break.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll continue with that healthy and unhealthy food discussion, of course, by Witani Childline radio program. And with me in the studio is Mazila and Engelbrecht. Nailed it this time. On the other side of the break, stay tuned.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things.
Welcome back. Healthy versus unhealthy food. Not versus, we are not comparing anything. Healthy and unhealthy food. And of course, this afternoon, educating us on that topic of healthy versus unhealthy food, Mazila and Engelbrecht. And that's the subject for today, like I pointed out, is healthy versus unhealthy food. Please take it away.
So we are back. Hope you enjoyed the break.
So
the joke for today is, what do you call a bear with no gums?
With no gums.
So what do you call a bear with no teeth? A gummy bear.
Great. Now, we didn't really discuss unhealthy food. Unhealthy food is food that is high in added sugar, salt, and unhealthy fats, but low in important nutrients. Eating these foods too often can have a negative effect on our health. Some examples of unhealthy foods are candy, potato chips, soft drinks, fresh French fries, donuts, and many more. So, healthy food is most definitely the best choice for our bodies. After this short break, we will be concluding our program.
A bear with no teeth, gummy bear. That's a good one, Alex. Now, we're going to go for another short break, and then we'll come back on the other side, like you heard Ms. Engelbrecht pointing out. The conclusion will be on the other side if you still would like to learn more on what to eat, how to eat, or how to tell between healthy and unhealthy food. You may want to stay tuned for the final part because, well, we always save the last. We always save the best for last. Pardon me.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And we are back, and thank you for being with us. And as we continue with the discussion of healthy versus unhealthy food, I will pass the ball back to Engelbrecht and Mazila. Take it away.
I hope you enjoyed the topic. We are now reached up the end of our program. We hope you enjoyed today's topic, and now for the questions we are leaving with you. If you were to change one thing in your life to make it healthier, what would it be?
Thank you so much for listening to Witani Childline Radio in collaboration with Eagle FM. Remember, if you need counseling support, you can contact the toll-free counseling numbers 106 or 116. We would also like to take this opportunity to thank our sponsors, UNICEF Namibia and the European Union, for their continued support. That's all for today.
See you next time. Same place,
same people, different topic.
Same place, same people, different topics. Thank you for bringing us that wonderful education, Alex Engelbrecht.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
And hope to see you guys next time again.
We can't wait.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima. Don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I. My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM, the eye. Good afternoon and welcome now to Home Run officially. I will keep you, we know there's no I in team. So this is Homran with Helmut and Dwight as usual, Monday to Friday, that is from 4 to 7, keeping a company as always, bringing you all kinds of topics from, especially in the world of politics and economics. We try to dial it down on the politics because there's a lot of theater going on there, but today's topic brings a lot of, has a lot of political aspect to it, because it's a topic that has to do with the security discussion across the African continent. What are we talking about in terms of security? Now, and this is coming from the declarations, resolutions, and decisions coming from the 2026 African Union annual gathering that took place back in February. Now, they had a whole discussion around security on the African continent, security in terms of conflicts, and I like how they split the, you know, like the sub-regional, look at the in terms of security on the African continent, in the very same way that we saw the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, how they looked at which country in the northern part of Africa participated, traded more with the African countries compared to the previous year. And they also looked at which country did the same in West Africa, and which country did the same in East Africa, Central Africa, and Southern Africa. And for the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, in terms of intra-Africa trade, Nigeria, in terms of trade growth, intra-Africa trade growth, in line with the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, Nigeria took the cake on that one. And so it's in pretty much in the same split in terms of looking at different regions in terms of trade. We're going to do the same for today's discussion, but in terms of security, but more on that on the other side of the break. So
much more. You get so much more with the ShopRite price, because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg Real Good Frozen Mixed Chicken Portions, only 104 Namibian dollars 99. 5 kg Nice Rice Parboiled White Rice for 89 Namibian dollars 99. And 1 liter Clover Long Life Full Cream Milk or Low Fat Milk for a low 22 Namibian dollars 99 each. Deals valid until 19 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Village News.
Welcome back. So let's talk about security on the African continent. Now, this is a particularly interesting discussion to have, since the whole African Union plan of silencing the guns by 2021 fell on its face. And
dramatically so.
Fell flat.
Well, not just dramatically so. It went up literally in dust and smoke and probably some gunpowder. So if you're looking for drama, yes, dramatically so is the right phrase to use.
Yeah. You know, I was about to complain about 3 hours. That's a long time to do Homran. And then we look at the content that we bring. We look at the document that we come with, and you can't help but go, you know what? This is not enough time. Now, I'm not giving the production or the supervisor guy a brilliant idea. But yeah. Now, when you look at this report, for example, I don't know why I love reports. Because when everything you have is a hammer, you think everything is a nail. That's how I look at pretty much every document that we are using as a source of reference. Mm. So decisions on the report of the Peace and Security Council on its activities and the state of peace and security in Africa.
Well,
state of peace and security in Africa.
Well, there's a funny thing. I think we also need to start with a little bit of a joke.
Oh.
At the start of our talk.
Uh-huh.
So
who likes jokes?
In that same document, that first thing there that says the assembly, paragraph 1, adopts, ne?
Okay.
Now, just a little bit lower, there's a sentence that starts with, also commends the Republic of Gabon and the Republic of Guinea for the timely implementation of their transition roadmaps, which led to the conduct of elections and lifting of suspension imposed by the PSC, and welcomes the two member states back to participating in the activities of the African Union. Now,
the Republic of what now?
Gabon and Guinea. We'll have to assume which Guinea this is, of the three Guineas on Africa.
So they weren't specific as to which Guinea they were talking about.
Yeah, because it technically doesn't say which Guinea it is. But
no, that's something I find interesting because they do that all the time. Like, we don't have three of them. Now we have to... Anyway, go on.
Now, the funny thing is, Nair, that particular sentence that highlights there shows also a scenario that what has been suffered across the African continent post-COVID, being an elections gets held, mm-hmm. Because there's a long-standing... For now, guys, I'll also highlight this. For now, I'm going to refuse calling an African leader a dictator or authoritarian in any way or format. I will just accept that you've been there for a long time. That's all I will accept. I won't use any other label. Mm-hmm. However, the change in government that takes place after an election when soldiers are involved are the ones, obviously, that removes these long-standing or long-serving presidents on the African continent. So we've seen it from Mali, we've seen it from Burkina Faso, we've seen it from Niger. Gabon was one. Was it Gabon?
Yeah,
Gabon was one. And then it was the same Guinea, this Republic of Guinea. They were almost the five guys post-COVID.
Yeah.
That had these, they have an elections, and then poof.
You have a government hostile takeover.
Yeah. Taking place.
Mozambique
was like a flirt. Was like flirting with the idea.
I meant to say Madagascar.
Yeah, Madagascar.
It's close.
No, but Madagascar did happen, Hamoud. But it was then quickly, you know, supposedly, according to what we heard and see, calm was quickly installed. Mm-hmm. But the guy is still president. That major, he's still president. He's still president. The only thing the heads of state of SADC could say was, please make sure that a peaceful transition takes place from your phase to the next phase.
Talk about beating around the bush. Now that's what took place there.
So, what then obviously pops up is a discussion of what the Peace and Security Council basically reported on to the heads of state. The Peace and Security Council of the AU, just to let you guys know, are obviously high-level officials. It's a particular department also under the AU. And this particular council is deemed as a standing decision-making organ. Now, I don't know what decision this thing can take on behalf of a country which has its own constitution and its own rights and its own particular laws. But supposedly, this is what the AU website says, the Peace and Security Council is the standing decision-making organ of the AU for the prevention, management, and resolution of conflicts. Well, how long did it take to get Rwanda and DRC to get to the table?
Actually, they failed to do that. It was the Qatari and the Americans that...
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Poor Lorenzo from Angola... tried
the Suluhu of Tanzania. They really tried to bring them together.
They literally tried bringing these guys to the same table, and these guys literally border onto these two countries. And the worst thing is, which is probably also a huge insult and probably a humiliation for the other African leaders, is that these same two African leaders decided to listen to Donald Trump and whatever you call the king of Qatar. They decided to listen to these two guys, of all people, Helmut.
Yeah.
Which you can basically also probably assume is, did something go? Was there a brown envelope?
I have a sneaky
suspicion. That's my only suspicion.
Envelope? Dwight, huh? Envelopes are for you and me. If there was something equivalent to what you're just describing, for them must have been a brown briefcase.
Briefcase? Do you think it would have been that small, Hamoud?
Okay. Yeah, you are right. Because when...
If an envelope is too big for you and me, uh-huh. A brown envelope, mm-hmm. Think of the station of a president, ne?
Okay, let's go with suitcases.
Who was but potentially also a former military man. Because I suspect Tshisekedi and Kagame... No, Kagame is known to be former military.
Former intelligence.
But I suspect Tshisekedi is also former military. So... let's just be honest. Was it probably the size of a ship? It definitely wasn't on the scale of Donald Trump, like a gold-plated plane. No. Was it a ship?
Donald Trump's bribe was the worst. I mean, after giving you a plane and my country is up in flames because of the war that you started, I would just bring... look, I would want my plane back.
Do you know what's the worst part, Almut? Which I technically also think the Qataris probably made this a practical joke on him to show him, I'm giving this thing to you so that everybody knows when they see that plane, where the plane comes from.
Yeah.
Meaning it's not that you could not afford the plane because Donald Trump is a billionaire.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, when they see that plane, everyone should know it came from the Qataris. This plane was given to you by the Qataris. So technically it was literally like a labeling on him. He was labeled with that plane. The American media, the people that were interviewed by like Jon Stewart and the other media and the other independent guys on YouTube, all of them were talking about corruption, corruption. No, you have to look at also in a different scenario. Look at it like, you know what a dog does usually, Helmut, when it's in a territory, what many animals do? They go and mark the territory.
They mark their territory.
Yeah, with the scent, ne?
Yeah.
Usually they go and pee on a blade of grass, on a stone, on a tree, on a fence, on a wall. That's how the dog goes and marks his territory, his or her territory. Now, I think that's what the Qataris did.
They mark their territory.
By giving the biggest, most flamboyant, most shiniest gift known to human history. Well, probably not the closest in human history. But it's big and shiny and it does fly.
They should have known.
They gave it to him. Do you know that he was with that plane, Helmut, now in Ankara, in Turkey, where the NATO summit was happening? Now, apparently, remember that he had to abruptly leave the summit. I don't know if you heard about it.
No.
There was supposedly some intelligence that there might be an attack on him. And then abruptly left Wednesday night.
Yeah.
And then he flew back. But the gold-plated plane was there in Ankara. And it flew away. And he had to leave on the older Air Force One.
Because that's a secure one.
That's the one that can be protected. That's the one designated by the U.S. Air Force.
Yeah, it was literally built
for that purpose. Yeah. He had to leave on that one. Not the gold-plated thing. So it seems like the actual Air Force one goes where he goes.
So
if he's flying in the gold-plated thing. So he's showing the world he's labeled.
Hang on a second. So... wherever he flies, take for example, if he decides to fly in the Qatari gift, the Air Force One also comes along.
Yes.
Just for the heck of it.
Yes.
And my firewood is the problem with climate change.
Yes.
You have two passenger airline-sized planes.
Yes.
That the are one just is a flying around willy-nilly.
The one is a flying fortress with an Air Force escort. Now remember.
And the other is a hotel.
And the other one is just a hotel with wings.
But hey, climate change, Helmut's firewood, they get out of here.
No, it's him.
Look,
it's him and his planes.
And you have how many of those things? And those things don't just go anywhere, by the way, without their, without their, what's this, fighter jet escorts.
Yeah.
So you have fighter jets and two fully sized Boeing planes.
So there would be two escorts for the two planes. And it's not like a truck. Or a road, or like a car, where everyone can drive behind each other in a convoy. Remember
aerodynamics or aerospace. No,
like in the navigation of the aerospace, that cluster with its escort has to fly there. You have to keep it like a safe follow-on distance between each other. So that cluster with its escort is flying there, and this cluster with its escort is flying over here. So it's double.
So it's double carbon dioxide
contributions. And remember, they are busy giving that contribution literally in the atmosphere where the sun molecules are being blocked.
Again, I keep asking, all this, my cattle at the farm are the problem. That's what you're telling me. That's just deliberate. And this is not just this is something that's private jet guys, and basically the aviation industry is known to do a lot, which is why I brought up the other day, ghost flights. Where you have airlines that are just flying almost, if not all, empty so that they can reserve the spot they have agreed on, with the airport that is halfway across the planet. So they have to go and reserve their spot at an airport, otherwise they would lose it. You have passenger planes that are being operated by a bunch of billionaires that are flying for the most part almost empty and contributing a huge amount of carbon dioxide in the air and among other gases. And you have VIPs that are doing pretty much the exact same thing. They have SUVs that are just emitting an ungodly amount of carbon dioxide in the air, and helicopters that are doing the exact same thing. They have private jets that are doing much worse. But my kettle and firewood are the problem. This is why it would be very difficult to have this discussion with a straight face. At least not with me. But anyway, back to our security. So, Guinea.
Yeah. So, I'm quickly going to send you something, Hamoud. Quickly now on WhatsApp. The other funny thing that we've got to look at is the biggest thing that never gets measured in the climate change discussion, just to help with a final point on that discussion, is the impact that war has in climate change. They mentioned it back with the Ukraine conflict when it began, because at that stage the guys specifically in the global north were starting to talk about green transition, just energy transition, the future of
global warming, 2015 Paris Agreement,
the future of energy is hydrogen, and then we started softly hearing the voice of nuclear. Nuclear is also there, and then people then start asking, now, what is the contribution of war on the global climate agenda? What's war's contribution? Do you know that they cannot supply that? They have to work with estimates. Because the ministries of defense of countries who are in current conflicts won't tell you how much fuel am I buying. You know, one of the worst things of a conflict is, Helmut, is in some cases, you can assume, if you know there's a national budget, let's say for fuel, then you can assume that for the country, just that nation's army, navy, and air force, it's probably going to be five times more than each one having theirs separately, five times more than the national need for energy.
For regular consumption.
For regular consumption. So now you sit with a fearful number. This could potentially mean, I send it to you, Hamid, the document. This could potentially mean that a discussion based upon about meeting the actual needs of the global climate agenda is for nothing, primarily because let's, for example, say Namibia decides to go and attack Angola, But Namibia now...
Relax, we're not coming.
Relax, guys. It's not actually that. It's just an example. Helmut and I, we love examples, but sometimes we need a victim in our examples.
Plus, it would be very difficult for us to attack Angola because we'll have to start with Windhoek North.
And Windhoek West.
It would be serious friendly fire from the beginning of the war.
We're sorry, guys. But yeah, that's where we start.
Yeah.
So... So some of the particular key things state or basically cite a scenario of how much does the actual war economy of, like, in Africa also consume. Now, I'll have to be honest with you as well. There are vacuums of information and data on this continent. Vacuums of information and data which basically transcend or cannot transcend, but they undermine the idea, the identity of how does Africa keep data, how, you know, and the data collected in reports, does it actually reflect the position on the ground? Now, on the AU scenario, what Helmut and I are dependent upon is we are dependent upon the AU submitting complete reports already.
Yeah.
So it's not like we are looking at a journalist or it's a European NGO or an American NGO. It's literally a heads of state sanctioned document that we can just access like this. For example, like the one I just shared now with Helmut, comes from, this is something that the Institute for Security Studies have on their, but it's like their own reports. But they cite literally, because they've got their stuff on here, their logo on here, but they cite like the key developments. And we're citing this particular report because it bridges December 2025 to January 2026. And it also cites in specific countries in this report, which are part of the Peace and Security Council for the AU. And they also mention the chairperson. The chairperson is an ambassador, Jean-Léon Ngandou Ilunga, who is the permanent representative from DRC to the AU and the Peace and Security Council chairperson that was present for January 2026. Now, it obviously shows you that the Institute for Security Studies, which is based, I think, in Johannesburg. Helmut? I think they are based in Johannesburg, ne?
I'm not sure if they are in Johannesburg, but I know they have, there are two offices that I know of. There's one in South Africa, there's one in Kenya.
The one is in Pretoria, the one is in Pretoria, the one is in Addis, the one is in Dakar. So it's
in Senegal. So one in Senegal.
And then they've got the Nairobi one, yeah. So they've got actually four offices. The key thing that you can see here is that there's technically an NGO, an African NGO, that is involved in the affairs specifically of peace and security on the African continent. And it's a resource that Helmut and I, we use a lot. So if you guys are interested in understanding, like, you know, the instability on the continent, we recommend this particular resource. It's a lovely thing to look at. And it also, you know, bridges the gap in terms of information that you would need. Now, what's in this particular report that I cited? As they looked at, in the time frame when the decisions, declarations, and the resolutions document came out in February when the heads of state met, is literally that this particular report actually also coincides in the period. Now, they obviously cite here that things need to happen. Africa needs to take responsibility for its actions, basically. That means also the individual countries and their relations between each other. Now, the first thing that you'll find in this report for February, for December, January, is it starts with this opening line of the reform of the African Union Commission needs a rethink. When the AU initiated the reform of the AU Commission nearly a decade ago, it was presented as a historic opportunity to modernize the institution, sharpen its focus, and to enhance its efficiency.
Sharpen its focus, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of sharpening taking place. However, led by President Paul Kagame at the time, the process sought to reshape the AUC into a leaner, more coherent body, equipped to carry out the continental agenda. But the central feature was reducing the number of commissioners from 8 to 6. This was achieved through major mergers, including the Political Affairs and Peace and Security Departments and the Trade and Industry and Economic Affairs Departments. I'm stopping there, Helmut. Because primarily, administrative things shouldn't be the worry for the everyday African on the ground.
Yeah.
Understanding, for example, let's use us. Let's use you and me, the Home Run crew. So, up and until end of June, our listeners knew we had a 2-hour show. On the 1st of July, boom, we're starting with a 3-hour show. We explained it in one scenario and, you know, it's cut and dry. It's straightforward stuff. In that scenario, you and I understand customer service primarily and stakeholder engagement primarily because we explained, explanation was given. And is it a train smash? We hope not. Is it going to impede someone? We hope not. But This is a change, and we're explaining. To explain this in every report of the Peace and Security Council is a bit of a weird, tedious, laborious. Okay, tedious and laborious is basically the same thing. But it's a tedious exercise. Why should I as an African know if my answer, my question is, why do we still have fighting on the continent? Why are we not peaceful? And the first thing you're telling me on page one is, understand reform of the African Union Commission needs a rethink. Yeah, dude. Whatever.
You don't say.
Does it tell the presidents who are fighting to stop fighting? No. Well, besides my rant, that is a technical tangent there. It then gets into the particular sort of like, the main crux of the issue, which is on page 5, which is the funding shortfall that threatens the AU Commission's restructuring. Now, the heads of state at the 11th Extraordinary Summit of the AU Assembly in 2018...
Because it's extraordinary.
Yeah. They entrusted the AU Commission with proposing a streamlined and detailed departmental structure. Now, this would be part of the AU institutional reform that was initiated in 2017, and it would replace the 2003 Maputo structure, which was considered too large, cost-effective, and become operationally inefficient. This is now under the Maputo infrastructure. Under the auspices of the Rapporteur Group of 10, the AUC then recommended the reduction of its departments from 8 to 6, and the AU Executive Council considered this at its first 35th meeting. However, at the heart of everything, the only thing this basically says, because obviously, is the council, Peace and Security Council, needs to understand that it needs money basically to go out in the field, and probably its structures were bloated. But I don't need to know that as an African. Mm-hmm. Look, it's nice putting it in a report here. It's nice to say, yes, you did this. But when I come to the declarations, resolutions, and decisions document, and I hear and I read over here that Gabon and what's his name? Republic of Guinea sort of like smoothed out their transition from military coups to becoming now fully fledged, whatever, obedient republics. Whatever that means, that's my label, whatever it means. Because it potentially could, because we don't know, does it mean that Gabon gave back civilian rule to the people of the country?
That was a family power transition.
Basically?
Yeah.
Because it was an uncle on his nephew? No? No, it was a cousin on a cousin. It was a cousin on a cousin.
Wait, it wasn't, wasn't it a nephew on the uncle?
No, Gabon, no, I'm thinking about Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia.
Huh?
Gabon is cousin on cousin.
Oh.
It was a general from the army who went and locked up his cousin, and then using the explanation like Traore and the other guy, the guy from Mali and the guy from Niger used. No, it's because we are sick and tired of these long serving politicians. Nothing is getting right. Gabon is cousin on cousin. And the Gabonese president was also a military man. He came from the army.
So you have a lot of... So you have a president in the executive office, and you have another family relative running the military.
Yeah.
So it's a family club.
Yes.
So it's Sri Lanka 2.0.
No, you don't even have to go far. It's Museveni, Uganda.
He's
president. His son is the head of the army. Now, I'm going to ask you this question, Hamoud. What do you think is going to happen if Museveni passes away?
Chances are very high the son is going to take the executive office.
Exactly. Straightforward stuff.
Power, it's a toxic thing. Now, on the Maputo structure in terms of African security to the... that transition from the old security structure to the new one.
Yeah,
just on that very same page 5, go to the third last paragraph. Third last paragraph.
Third last, which is basically nevertheless.
It starts with however, page 5, third last paragraph.
No, I am on page 5.
Page 5 of
You're talking about the restructuring up there.
However, the latest skills.
Oh, however, the latest skills. Okay. Third last. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Hamoud. I was looking at financial implication being a paragraph, but it's actually a label. Yeah. So, however, the latest skills audit and the competency assessment special audit report that was issued in 2024, January, noted that the new structure's supplementary costs were 70% higher than the funding for the Maputo institutional composition. The report indicated that delays in implementing the AUC's new structure, which was an assessed staff placement, compensation for unit for unfit staff termination and recruitment, were due mainly to member states' struggles to cover the financial gap, which is still haunting the African Union.
Now, bottom right corner
shows us the numbers.
Very nice highlight there.
$53 million.
Yep. The new structure brings with it $53 million in US supplementary financial burden. So, look, they seem to indicate that one of the reasons was to downsize the larger groups of the old structure.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that make it okay? Now, I would think the reason for the downsizing is to make it cost effective, except according to the Institute of Security Studies, it didn't.
No, it didn't, because they technically gave themselves more work.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
You see, Hamoud, let me explain it to you what's currently also what you would see with these mergers that happen with our ministries here. So, I explained it like back in last month. Ask yourself, does the Ministry of Mines and Energy, its previous format, do they understand what industries mean?
I would assume they do, because the alternative is scary.
Well, they do represent two foundational industries, mining and energy sector, because mining and energy are also industries. But now you could put the half of the broken up Ministry of Industry and Trade, you go give industries now to mines and energy. And now it becomes literally the acronym MIME. We're not talking about the artist to mime, but you read it as miming. So now the ministry becomes MIME.
That's why we just call it clown. Look, some of these abbreviations, who came up with that?
I don't know, bro. I don't know. It's like I want to make jokes every time of education's acronym or abbreviation. MASAC is your sack.
Oh, no. I didn't think of it that
way. Because it literally plays like a song. If you say it, ne? You immediately start thinking about a song that you want to sing that it's just not so safe.
No, the thing is that now I'm thinking of it, it took me back to the Spanish. Is it mi casa, su casa?
Yeah.
Yeah. Except this one is, Mesac. It's like they reversed the mi casa, su casa to Mesaca to Lusaka. Zambians are kind of mad at me. Anyway.
Yeah. So, obviously, the financial burden of things will always be there in the internal structures of the organization.
Yeah.
The reason we are highlighting this, dear listeners, is so that you can understand what's happening behind the scenes. Because many of you will ask the question of, now, why are we Africans still bombing and shooting each other? But there's a new lining under this discussion. I say a new because we're showing administrative.
Yeah.
The part of this, is it a declaration? Yeah, it's a decision document. This decision document has a very lovely just the next level where it gets into Central Africa. And literally, they start condemning Rwanda and DRC.
Oh, boy.
Now, remember, guys, this is February that this document was written.
Yeah.
Ne? And still today, things... Just because you don't hear about it, sorry... Just because you don't hear about it doesn't mean the animosity still does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
The threat is high because immediately after February, it was March or was April, where the M23 guys showed up. Remember that mining complex they showed up at? Hamoud? They just showed up. And they said, no, we are here just to check up and make sure that the mines are safe.
They just showed up, guys. Literally. In direct contravention of the agreement that was signed last year in October. And everyone was sitting there scratching their head going like, why is M23 walking around like, you know, like as if they are the owners of the mining enterprises? And that's when I watched the very lovely interview that was held on the international news platforms, like with Deutsche Welle. And they were interviewing a guy, a DRC guy, a Congolese guy who's based in Paris.
They do that a lot.
Yeah. And this guy was just throwing stones at Rwanda, at Kagame, and at M23. And then you sit there, and I sat there listening to that report going like, but this guy is acting as if Mobutu and DRC were innocent. Since 1990, they are acting as if these guys were innocent. So yeah, so in the decisions section, which literally starts in the second paragraph, it says, reaffirms its commitment to the strict respect for the sovereignty, the independence, the unity, and the territorial integrity of the DRC, stressing that the principles of non-interference, good neighborliness, and regional cooperation must be fully respected, and condemns any violation of such in DRC, and also condemns the illegal exploitation of natural resources by armed and terrorist groups, including the AFC/M23, the establishment of its parallel administration, and urge all African states and those of the UN not to recognize the parallel administration, and urges also the DRC's neighboring countries to play a positive role in search for peace in the Great Lakes region in general and in Eastern DRC in particular. It sounds like stones were thrown at Kagame.
You bet.
Massive stones. Okay, not massive. These were more like pebbles, you know, that were thrown. Because they mentioned someone else's name that was not at the signing agreement, which is your disclaimer.
Yeah.
You know? Two other people showed up.
Yep.
Which were not M23 and the DRC equivalent. What's its name, Tochman? The DRC paramilitary unit. So, other people are being told about the sovereignty of DRC. But in reality, we can literally see that things still stay unresolved, Hamoud. This is still unresolved issues, problems, scenarios that are just not going away. These are things so big, so bad, that you really have to ask the question, okay, so what's the end game here? Where are we in 2026? What do we hope to achieve? I submit it there, Helmut, just for the time being.
FDLR, as the M23 equivalent.
Yeah, because their name is was written in French.
Yeah. Now, you know what? This is something that I like to point out is one thing that at least I have discovered is we like to beat around the bush. I know there are a lot of diplomatic ties and there are a lot of trade agreements on the line of being honest with ourselves, especially in terms of security.
Mm.
Just like any conflict, what did we see with the recent overthrow of Bashar al-Assad in Syria? Now, from the Obama administration, the American intelligence community, basically, the US government have been finding a bunch of guys that are anti-government establishment to go and fight the Bashar al-Assad government. Yeah. And he was kicked out of office. That, for me, is an excellent example of why we have a lot of terrorist activities. One excellent example is the Rwanda and DRC. There are two agreements that brought about that temporary peace, peaceful settlement of the armed conflict, which seems to be cracking up. It's, I mean, there are cracks showing, popping up everywhere.
Yeah.
Because if you just look at the tensions that have already, you know, the guys are already throwing stones at each other. And the SADC, how the SADC guys, because the DRC is a member of SADC.
Mm.
And, yeah, I believe SADC is a member of both, DRC is a member of both SADC and the East African Community. Which is why when Suluhu Hassan and Mnangagwa met to sort of like try to deliberate on how to bring about the peaceful settlement of the armed conflicts between DRC and Rwanda, Mnangagwa of Zimbabwe and Suluhu Hassan of Tanzania, Mnangagwa was representing SADC and Suluhu Hassan was representing the East African Community.
Mm.
They wanted to bring these people together because the East African Community, that's where... yeah, DRC is a member of the East African Community, so DRC is represented in that capacity. Rwanda is a member is a member of the East African Community. Again, Rwanda is represented in that capacity. Now, Mnangagwa has to be there because DRC is a member of both SADC and East African Community. So so Suluhu Hassan was there to represent both DRC and Rwanda.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, except none of these guys could actually bring these two in and put them in the same room. They didn't even show up for this event that produced the document that we're using as our main source of reference today. And here's the thing.
Oh yeah, they both most weren't in.
There's one where one of them just I think it was the president of DRC that had to attend the whole event via Zoom.
That was last year.
That was last year.
That was last year. So it wasn't this year because remember the US signature was the signing event was last year. Not this year.
So when did they meet in Qatar? Was that last year?
Also last year.
Also last year. So when the African, not the African Union, when SADC representatives met for a cooperation in the region, and that was this year. Last month.
Yeah.
One thing they emphasized was how to bring about peace and security in the region. Now this is the SADC region, and again, one thing they emphasized just towards the end of the event was. Let's just keep the Doha and Washington Accords. And they were specifically mentioned.
Yeah.
The Doha and Washington Accords, aka the agreements that brought about the peaceful, quote unquote, peaceful settlement. Because like I pointed out, the cracks are beginning to show in that whole settlement. And the question that I kept asking both seriously and from a sarcastic point of view was, why is it that, every time that the bombs begin to fly between these two countries, DRC and Rwanda, all the finger seems to be pointed to at least publicly, M23 and the FDLR.
I think the M23 guys are a bit, what's the word? I almost used the Afrikaans word, voorbarig. Voorbarig is like, you know, they are showboating. They want to brag. They want to say, hey, guys, we still have a community engagement, ne?
With an AK-47, I'm not showing up to that community engagement. Here's the thing.
But the thing is, they're walking through your town saying, hello, guys, just letting you know we're still your friendly neighborhood M23.
Friendly, they're always armed to the teeth.
Yeah, that's just why they're telling you, we are the friendly neighborhood M23s. Remember us.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. All I just want to know is maybe I just missed a source or two.
Yeah.
For both the negotiations that was mediated by the Qatari that led up to the to the Doha Accords.
Yeah.
And the mediations that were the peace agreements that brought about the Washington Accords. The mediation was done by the Americans. I don't remember being told that, these are the guys that are representing FDLR and these are the guys that are representing M23. They just pointed out, these are the guys that are representing DRC. These are the guys that are representing Rwanda. Now, the thing is, what I don't understand is, I'm seeing guys that, the people that are doing the fighting on the ground and causing all the chaos, FDLR and M23. But when it comes to negotiating to bring about the peaceful resolution, I mean, the resolution to the conflict that's being fought by the quote-unquote terrorist guys, I don't see any terrorists at the table.
Yeah.
The question, and now that's how we begin to see that this was a proxy war the whole time.
No,
that's the only conclusion I can reach. It's a proxy.
It is a proxy, Hamoud. You are right. You are right.
No.
It's been a proxy war, and it seems like no one wants to stop it.
No, no one wants to stop it. And here's the thing. If FDLR and M23 are a bunch of guys that everyone wants to believe that they're just deranged running around with a bunch of trigger-happy guys, but when you look at it from a negotiating standpoint and how they don't show up at negotiated eating tables, but they only show up when it's when bullets are flying, someone is pulling the strength, in executive office here.
Mm.
But now, on an African Union level, we are not having that discussion, which is what this is also something that I found fascinating. The Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, is on an African tour. I think he's been recently in Ethiopia. And yesterday I checked, I don't know where he is today, but yesterday he was in Niamey, in Niger.
Mm.
Now, this is the region of the guys that base recently just told France, get the heck out of here.
Yeah.
And ever since then, these guys have always had terrorist activities. But ever since they said, you know, they kicked the French out, they seem to have been, the terrorist activity seems to have just, you know, ramped up like a whopping margin. So, here's the thing. If Niger is not talking to France, but they seem to be in a cozy relationship with the Russians, my question is, the terrorists are definitely talking to someone.
Yeah, they are.
They are talking to someone.
They are.
Now, look, after the whole FDLR and the M23 and the Washington and the Washington and Doha Accords, one thing I've concluded is wherever I see terrorism, there's a legitimate government behind that terrorist organization.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 750 mils Rite brand sunflower seed oil, only $29.99. 5 kg top score super maize meal for only $69.99. And 2 kg Rite brand golden brown sugar for a low $36.99. Deals valid until 19 July 2026. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
16 into the hour of 5. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we're here until the hour of 7. So we still have a lot of time and, believe me, a lot of information to cover. Now, the thing is, when it comes to the use, you know, the proxy use of armed guys to overthrow a government, that's not something that's new. This has been well documented in the history of armed conflicts. You can just look at the 21st century alone. My favorite example is the 1950s Niger, not Niger, Guinea Conakry with Sokoto, Mohamed Sokoto Toure. And how just a bunch of armed guys were used to overthrow his government. And this is something that we have, you know, witnessed, basically with the arming, you know, with the arming of, anti-government, anti-establishment, individuals in Syria to overthrow, Bashar al-Assad. Now, terrorism is being fueled by established governments with vested interest in regions. That's the only conclusion that anyone can reach. Now, the thing is, when it comes to mainstream media reporting of, and more like a scrutiny of these things and just deliberation of this type of questions and a deeper look at things, why it's very difficult to have this discussion on an African Union level. It's because we have legislations that are very technical in their interpretations. And there's a reason for that. And I totally understand. But I feel like by ignoring that component, we are just finishing taxpayers' money by showing up to events every year and then, beat around the bush and then take pictures and have all you can eat buffet at the end of the day. Because we're not going to solve problems. I know countries with vested interest tend to fund either private or public military armies to go and get their interest. Again, that's not something that's new. For the millionth time, that's literally the history of Iran. Well, 1950s. 1953, a government takes over who decides to nationalize natural resources. A private company stands to lose billions with the nationalization of those resources. That particular private company goes to two governments, give them, as you can imagine, a behind load of money to use their secret service to overthrow the government that did the nationalization. It's well documented history. All you just have to do is read Encyclopedia Colonizer, or if you want to be politically correct, Encyclopedia Britannica. That's a fancy Latin way of saying British Encyclopedia. So the reality on the table of why it would be very difficult to resolve all the armed conflict, or not just on the African continent, by the way, this is taking place the world over, is because it's... But for the most part, if you want to get access to certain natural resources of a country, just destabilize the region. At least that can easily be interpreted from the well-documented historical reference. Now, for Africa, why is there a lot of conflict on the African continent? I think the same question can be asked about pretty much any region. It's all based, or it's all interest based. I know, we like to make it like, it's Muslims versus Christians, black people versus white people. And for some reason, I don't subscribe to that, because for me, my interpretation of all these things after basically looking at how much interest is important for multinational corporations, but just whole countries, is that you want to get access to certain natural resources, and the individual, more like the president in power, the person in the executive office, takes that interest forcefully from you. You can just fund an army to come and destabilize the region, and then you can just overthrow the government, take one guy that is just in line with your interest, put them in office, make them and their family and a bunch of their cojones rich, and you're good to go. I think I can make an excellent dictator, thanks to the University of Eagle FM. Now, decision on the report of the Peace and Security Council on its activities and state of peace and security in Africa. This is one of those documents that is written in Oxford level English, but for me, still beats around the bush. Actually, this is not beating around. There is beating around the bush, and there is this. This is beating around the Amazon jungle, not the bush. So, like I pointed out earlier, the genius part of the of the security analysis on the African continent that the document basically sums up is that it's split in terms of discussion of the security around on the African continent in sub regions of the of the African continent. The first one they looked at was on Central Africa, security on Central Africa, and then they looked at the next one that came up was security in Eastern Africa. This your part of Somalia, Kenya, Ethiopia, your whole Tigray region tensions. So the first one was Central Africa. They looked at Central Africa, and then they looked at Eastern Africa, and they also looked at the next part. They looked at Northern Africa, and then they looked at Southern Africa. Now we are in Southern Africa. Now since we still have an hour and 37 minutes left. It's safe to say we have all the time to basically look at the security concerns that was pointed out. By this decision from the African Union. So, shall we start with the security concerns on the African continent? Begin with Central Africa. Then just follow the document all the way through.
When you follow the document all the way through, because I heard my punchline come through, specifically with Helmut activating me.
He's gone.
Okay, we've moved most now past DRC and
Rwanda,
And Rwanda. Because technically they were the only feature in, is it Central Africa? Let me be sure. Yeah, they're the only feature in Central Africa. But it does move on into another realm, primarily when you've got to go look at other things. Okay, close this thing. They do go through the rest of Africa specifically in terms of some of the other concerns. Now, still staying in the Central African realm. Not the Central African realm, because the Central African chapter is pretty big itself.
I like the.
Yeah, no. Still
detailed.
Still on Central Africa. There is another dimension that pops up specifically on. What's this country's name? Central African Republic. This is point 7. Welcomes.
Every time you mention that country, I think of Jean Bedel Bokassa.
Well, it was also just past COVID that they were the only African country that adopted Bitcoin as legal tender. Can you believe that nightmare? As legal tender. So the Central African, the heads of state obviously welcomes the progress made in the implementation of the political agreement for peace and reconciliation in the Central African Republic and the positive security and political developments in the country. Encourages the Central African Republic authorities to continue to consolidate these gains with the support of the AU, the Economic Community of Central African States, ECAS, and the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region, the ICGLR, and also to implement, with the support of regional and international partners, the National Development Plan 2024-2028. But I'll stop there. Central African Republic and Chad were ground zero for the introduction of the international mercenary group Wagner, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Before COVID. Wagner is literally where the Russian mercenaries were busy basically getting hands-on experience in conflict.
Hands-on experience.
Or if you want to use another, you know, more like industrial terminology, they were getting on-the-job training. I know. I'm sorry, guys.
Technically, you are very correct.
It was where Wagner got on-the-job training.
Yeah. I mean, that's one heck of a transition from snow to Sahara.
No, from Gulag to Sahara. So the situation was also one of trying to understand the peace and security element.
Yeah.
Because before COVID, the only spots that Africa had to worry about was Central African Republic, Chad. Chad and Benin are right next to each other, which were the, because CAR was where the Muslim versus Christian communities were fighting each other. Chad was another sort of like a Boko Haram because Chad borders onto Niger, but Benin also borders onto Niger and Nigeria in some other way. It's literally that little cluster of countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before you get into the Sahel, because mm-hmm. Central African Republic is the last one, or no, Chad is the last one into the Sahel.
Mm-hmm.
Before you get into the Sahara Desert, formal here in the Central African neighborhood. The downside of that have been, Helmut, because we have to, and there's a segment in this decisions part, né, that gets into counterterrorism. Now, we have to cite that counterterrorism or terror activity has been heavy, specifically in that Central African neighborhood.
Yeah.
Because people don't have to go far to try and also understand where does Niger, where does Boko Haram actually come from? And what the Nigerians themselves have pointed out to has been that the Christian side of Nigeria has been the most stable part of the country. The problematic areas from the interviews that I did back in, was it 2023? Yeah, 2023. The problematic areas of Nigeria were always the Muslim majority northern states of Nigeria. They don't have regions or provinces, guys. They call them states. They're like India.
Yeah, they're huge by landmass.
Yeah. So those northern states that border onto Muslim majority countries, which are like Niger, Benin, except for Cameroon to the east of Nigeria, but and this is literally what these two people also explained back then. There's a problem in terms of not just governance, but also in law enforcement and in stability, providing security, peace and stability in those states that border onto these other countries. Mm-hmm. Now, the first thing you would understand then, Helmut, from that statement would be, so does it mean that the borders are problematic between Nigeria and some of its Muslim majority neighbors? And remember when Boko Haram came into the limelight back in the early 2000s?
Yeah.
Do you remember what was one of the issues when the South African mercenaries that went over to help the Nigerian army, after they could find Boko Haram in 1 week?
Yeah.
And the Nigerian army couldn't find Boko Haram. Oh, but before we continue, we've got a... I'm going to tell a story, guys.
Oh, I have a very fancy comment. Actually funny, but we'll continue this.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, I was... Oh, my man. You've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just keep my eyes. Anyways, long story short. Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Yeah, let's just start.
Yep.
Yeah. My story. Okay, my story. So, if you guys can remember back to the highly publicized emergence of Boko Haram in the early 2000s, 2010s, the Nigerian army couldn't find Boko Haram. That was one of the particular complaints, because the Nigerian population or citizens were asking, why can't you guys stop them? And then a bunch of South African mercenaries said, hey, listen, we can do it.
Yeah.
We can do it, obviously for a fee, but we can do it. We can come and help you. And they found Boko Haram in 5 days, remember? Just so that you guys remember the story. A bunch of ex-South African soldiers could find Boko Haram in 5 days. Now, I'm not bragging on behalf of the South Africans. No, definitely not. However, it also gives you insight into a situation of some of the foundational issues in the rest of Africa. You guys are worried about whether or not ACC actually does its job. In other parts of Africa, you guys should be worried about... Helmut would come up with a lovely story because he told me just now, and I told him, you can't put these two words in the same sentence right next to each other, Nochal. You can't put them together. But Helmut, please, indulge us with that story.
According to Africa News, President Bola Tinubu has recently ordered an investigation into how a fake government agency operated openly in his administration. The name of that government agency, which was this close to getting taxpayers' money as part of his, you know, Ministry of Finance, financial allocation for government agencies. The organization went by Presidential Foreign Intervention Promotion Council.
Yay! Presidential.
President. Bro had an office. He had a presidential seal at the back of his. Look, Bro had a well structured. Their videos. I don't know if they are AI generated or not because I found them online. But the article, you can find the article on. You can find the article on Africa News. Look, there is no way you can read that with a straight face. Someone now. Think of it as someone, think of it as the, what's this, NIPDB.
Mm.
Yeah, think of it as the president coming out today and saying that, you know what, this NIPDB, this organization is fake. Every Namibian will be like, what do you mean it's fake?
We know you unveiled it. Okay, not you specifically, but your predecessors did.
Yeah, like, so this Presidential Foreign Intervention Promotion Council, a very long, look, there was an SOE, I think there, it's part of the anti-corruption division, that, you know, that started asking questions to the secretariat.
Mm.
That, have you ever heard of this organization? Like, no, we haven't.
Well, they seem act as if they are, you know, representing you
they
guys.
They seem to have all the documents that look very convincingly legit.
Yeah. So, who is this organization?
Who are these guys? So, now, the guy who spearheaded the whole thing, it's
the
now
operation.
Now
we have to call it the operation.
It's an operation. So now homeboy is facing trial. I mean, he's facing criminal charges. Now the question that's not the question that a lot of people are asking.
Mm.
The question that everyone is asking for the most part is how did someone pull this off to the point of almost being allocated millions of dollars in US dollars? I think, in Namibian dollars, but I think the money that was supposed to be allocated to his operations was about 900,000 and something US dollars.
So that would have been 18 million. No? Yeah, 18 million. Almost 18 million.
So, think about Helmut creating an organization that is so legit looking to the point where the Ministry of Finance is considering allocating money at the beginning of the financial year to this organization. Now, the question I can't help but ask myself as a Namibian is, aren't these the things that require, you know, public engagements, stakeholder engagements, public consultations or something?
Well, it depends on what.
Or maybe I'm just looking at it from a Namibian perspective.
It's the Namibian perspective you've got on.
Yeah.
It's the Namibian lens you've got on. It's even the same thing with, like, in South Africa, Helmut. It took me a very long time to understand that South Africa is something known as a provincial government.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
We call it a regional council.
Yeah.
Ne? A regional council.
Yeah.
But the regional council is elected from the town councils and municipalities in the region.
Yeah.
Whereas in South Africa, the provincial government is literally, think of it literally as a government. There's a department for education,
mm-hmm.
department for agriculture, a department for this. The only
for
thing
that specific province.
Yeah. Yeah. For that specific province. And then they've got like this small, think of it like a board in a company,
mm-hmm.
but a small council at the top of that provincial government. Remember Ace Magashule from mm-hmm. South Africa?
Yeah.
He was most, what's the name they called him? What's the title he had for Free State? Ace was MEC was his title. That was his title, the mm-hmm. MEC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the MEC, Helmut, in Namibia's context, is the governor. However, it's also the similar thing that our president does when appointing governors.
Yeah.
You know, they are appointed by the president directly. So they report to the president directly,
yeah.
which also shows you technically how systems of undermining politics, not politics undermining politics, how a system that can undermine
a structural issue.
What people voted for in a region can undermine the messaging. Because do you know what's the next thing that an opposition party will do?
Mm.
Why should we listen to this governor that no one elected for? Which is a factual thing.
Yeah.
Helmut. Which is a factual statement. And it's a statement born from a legit concern. A governor is not some, is in Namibia, is not someone you voted for.
Yeah.
Now, you voted for the National Council.
Yeah.
Not your National Council, your Regional Council. You cast a vote wherever you find yourself in your country.
Yeah.
Now, in South Africa, the situation is slightly similar, but just make it big. Just think of it as being bigger. Now, we understand our Namibia, South African context.
Yeah.
Go to Nigeria. How often do you think such kinds of fraud and corruption take place?
Now, look, that's not just the question that I can't stop asking myself. The second one is, okay, first of all, I'm so glad we have public stakeholder engagements, and I'm so glad we have basically consultations before implementing something that has that will impact the lives of the general public, because that shows a lot of things in relation to democracy being in practice, minus the whole governors and their assistants and all that appointments. That is actually counter-democracy, because if you're talking about public representatives, the publics must be involved into electing their representatives. If you just go, picking them because... Okay, maybe you can say they are elected by proxy because the president who is appointing them was elected, but that's a very long... That's stretching it. Now... If there are no consultations...
You will laugh because there is no consultation in what I'm going to add after.
After
your story. But you will laugh when we get to Gabon. Please, Hamoud, please continue. I just had to let you know another slightly jokeified statement will pop up.
Look, if there are no consultations, you can't be shocked about finding out that you have... someone who started a... Well, a government agency.
Yeah.
Because, the reason why consultations are a very good initiative is because they are part of the transparency process. It's very difficult for me to start a government agency that will just fly under the radar to the point of having access, getting on the money allocation list of the Minister of Finance. I don't see how one can pull that off in Namibia.
No, it's super difficult in Namibia since everybody knows everybody in Namibia who knows somebody.
Who knows? Well, everybody.
And it's not just about saying, I know a guy.
No.
You know a guy. You know his sister. His sister knows your sister. Your sister knows someone else's sister that ends up most probably knowing somebody that is the prime minister.
Now, that's just one of those questions that's getting me going. How is that possible? Again, I'm Namibian, so I will look at all these things mostly from a Namibian standpoint. And that's the same question that I also keep asking about the whole IMF and Senegal saga.
Yeah.
What do you mean you almost made money available in terms of budget allocation? What do you mean you were given falsified information in relation to the budget, to the debt to GDP ratio of that particular country? When are you supposed to
have this from the get-go?
Exactly.
Yeah. Wasn't it supposed to be like detailed and audited statements?
Don't you have any authentication process in place? Because whether you have authentication process in place, whether the answer to that question is yes or no, they're both scary. If it's yes, the question is why didn't you flag it? If it's no, the question is why don't you have one? So whether the answer is yes or no, none of which is good for your leadership. None of which is good.
None.
So now, coming back to the security discussion, if this is just taking place from a financial standpoint, and you can bring that discussion in terms of, we can bring that discussion in terms of, take for example, Mozambique is an excellent example of how people just walk up to a $2-something billion debt.
Yeah.
And the question is, weren't they supposed to be public discussions on this, like this and this and this is what's going to happen? It turns out, every time that I look at this, every time that I come across these scandals, I can't help but look at Namibia's architecture in terms of how things are done, especially about public engagements, and go like, oh, that's why we have them. Yeah. It makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, it's also a scenario, Hamoud, of, so for like recently, our colleague Anacleta she reported on a thing, the recent supposed nuclear energy bill, where members of the public were invited to basically participate in this discussion at the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And three or four people showed up. And then the governor had to stop this. Now, in Namibia, you can see active participation.
Yeah.
You can actively see by a community, by stakeholders, by representatives of the government.
You know what my comment was on that post?
Yeah. What was your comment?
WhatsApp status is not marketing.
Yeah. For who?
For that event.
Is that what you believe it happened? The marketing.
I have a sneaky suspicion is what happened.
I also have a
Someone sneaky. Just decided to put it on their status and assumed everyone is going to know.
No, do you know what's my assumption?
Mm-hmm.
Is I think someone else did their part in communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And all they did was just send an email and explainer and say, hey, Lester, you guys are going to host an event. Make sure you guys have your stuff there.
Yeah.
And they told the governor. And the governor delegated to other people. And the other people, like you said, which is now your WhatsApp status notification, went and did the WhatsApp status notification. And that's in many cases how some people forget what is the actual use of that function, that specific social media tool.
Mm-hmm.
That social media tool, Helmut. Have you ever tried following up on something from a WhatsApp status?
Mm-mm. Let me just say social things. Yeah.
But if the thing does not have a link in it, you won't be able to be referred to the actual source.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're hoping this person downloads a TikTok video that shows you something funny.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll be doing what Dwight does. Old school. I copy the link from my YouTube shorts.
Yeah.
If it's funny, put it in my WhatsApp status. The link shows you there, and there's like a still image showing whoever is viewing, hey, there's this funny thing Dwight shared. Now, the downside of trying to share an event notice about, hey,
there'll be these consultations.
This is the conversation
on this
we're having.
Topic on this day.
Please show up. We're having this discussion, and then everybody's like, "Ah, nuclear bill. Is there food?" Believe you me, if they said drinks and refreshments available, people would have showed up.
But those things are always available. People don't attend these events because.
No, I just think that people went and did the WhatsApp status thing, and no one anyway read it because they were like, what's nuclear power?
You know what? Now that you brought up the whole food discussion, it really makes sense because, I've attended several of these events.
Mm.
Oh boy, do they have coffee break and the lunch break and all that.
That was why I told you most of the meme about the academics who say, please, we don't want Zoom calls. That's why we love coming for international seminars. The buffet.
All you can eat.
All you can eat.
But on the bright side, though, it's a good thing. These events are good for the hospitality industry.
Of course it is. Yeah. It makes business. It creates economic data that Helmut and Dwight can share here on Eagle FM, talking about the hospitality looking wonderful because there's just business trips happening to Namibia. Yes, it makes us look wonderful. We've got... don't worry. It's a slight.
No, look, I'm still on Central Africa. Hang on a second.
Are you still there? Because I want to go over to our Bra Gabon.
Oh, no.
So I looked up in between there, Hamoud, about, because just below the Central African thing.
Yeah.
So the heads of state guys go and thank, let me read this. Why did you close on me? But the heads of state or this particular statement goes and thanks the president of Gabon, Brice Nguema, for a peaceful transition. So I go look up
Who is Bryce Nguema?
Peaceful transition.
Wasn't Bryce the guy that beat up his cousin, locked him up, Ali Bongo, the other president?
Oh, yeah.
And then I see, but this is Bryce. Bryce is the guy in Nguema. So they technically, just in sort of like summarizing, because the document closed on me here while I switched on the phone again. They go and thank Bryce for transitioning to a previously democratic state.
No, look, the transition is not the problem. The peaceful part.
Nohal. He was the reason for the not-so-peaceful situation.
Look, I remember Ali Bongo. He went viral for, you know, for... Now, there's a video on social media of this guy saying, come and help. And people, you know, auto-tuned the whole thing so it became a song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of Ali.
Mm-hmm.
While Ali was being locked up.
Yeah, he was locked up.
Because I remember the videos from 2023.
I think he was seated in a white shirt.
Yeah, yeah. And the army officers that arrested him were standing with like the, okay, not like with this ring light now close to us, but literally with like, you could see it was someone's mobile phone with a flash on there, standing above the guy's head, and the guy is like squinting out of the light, you know. And then the guy was told, listen, please tell the population out there, things are peaceful up here with you. Anakam, your hands are tied, and don't, you know, don't cause any alarm. But the whole capital of Gabon is filled with army.
That was a family power transition.
It was. Let me read you that part. So it's paragraph 10. I'll just say the African Union heads of state. The African Union heads of state congratulates President Bryce Clotaire Oligui Nguema on his election. He even had an election, Helmut.
That's a nice one.
On his election as president of the Gabonese Republic, after you showed up with shotgun situations in 2023 after the other election, and commends the successful organization of the presidential election on 12 April of 2025, which marked the return to constitutional democratic order and brought an end to the situation of unconstitutional change of government. But he was the reason for the unconstitutional change of government. How do you understand this joke, Hamoud? I show up because you won the election, eh? Which in many cases, in many people's eyes, apparently looks like a free and fair election. Mm-hmm. But you win the election. Dwight shows up here with his asset forfeiture and more department. And the GMA and the GMA and the Ek wil hê wat jy het squad. And we literally tie you up. Shoot a little TikTok video of you tied up, and then we tell the people of the country, please be calm. And then I call myself president with these other guys that I promised high positions in the government, because we now removed Helmut and his brass from their positions in government. And then I say, tell the African Union, listen, I'm gonna go return to peace. We're gonna have an elections again in 2025, 2 years later. Then we do it. And I anyway win the elections.
Yeah.
Because everybody's afraid. And everybody's afraid of me because everybody knows I've got a tight grip over the military. And remember, Gabon is an oil producing country.
Yeah.
Gabon is an oil producing country.
That discussion brings us to one part that we are, you know, one part of this discussion, a security discussion, not just a security discussion, because I believe the security discussion, the security concern is one of the symptoms that is coming out of not having the real discussion on a leadership level as to what type of political governance or economic system that a country would like to adopt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, If you look at it, for example, the Western concept of democracy is one that is hailed as the best, template which is, everyone market what they have.
Mm.
And one thing that's been pointed out is, and there have been a lot of, throwing rocks in the direction of China as to why doesn't China want to adopt the Western concept of democracy.
Mm.
And basically any country, I think this is where Russia and China are criticized a lot because they have not adopted democracy, quote unquote, the Western way.
Yeah.
But they just, if you ask me, China and Russia just decided, we would like to run
North Korea. You're forgetting North Korea.
Yeah, thank you. North Korea
and Cuba.
They just decided. Look, we have a different way of doing this whole governance thing, and we're going to do it our way.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what China is doing, and that's exactly what North Korea is doing, and that's what Russia is doing. But the thing is, anything now that is not done the Western way is more often criticized as the evil way of doing things, but. Is that really true?
Well,
let
me ask you with your question.
Yeah.
Think about Namibia.
Yeah.
Do you think we're a one-party state or not?
We're not a one-party state.
No. But look at what is in reality, Helmut. Not what words are telling you.
Mm-hmm.
What is happening in reality?
Okay, I know we have multiple political parties.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Namibia is literally like a sheep dressed in a wolf's skin. I'm intentionally flipping it about.
Okay.
So we're
good at playing gangster.
Yes. We sell the facade of a multi-party system there,
mm-hmm.
but we've only had one political party win since independence.
Okay, now I'm lost. I know the one party winning elections since independence.
Which is a fact.
Definitely a fact, yeah.
And in the three court challenges that have taken place in our presidential elections realms, basically you could see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Nothing will change the end result as well. When you look at it, just think to yourself, Helmut. Just even after the show, think to yourself.
Because now I'm thinking about Botswana already and Zambia already. Because one thing that I remember talking about a lot following, weeks leading to our recent election, president and national assembly election, is when we look at Zambia and Botswana, where two examples that basically pops up out of the African continent over how. A lot of people, just the post-independence of a lot of African countries, seems to be having this, we fought for this country fatigue in terms of political party affiliation. And one thing that you're seeing is that the more people, the more time passes, the more you see people, thinking of changing political party in terms of who to run the country.
Yeah.
And we saw that with Zambia, and we saw that recently with Botswana. Botswana is the one that
South Africa is the only one that has to change now.
South Africa is the only one that has to.
That has to change as well.
South
Africa and Namibia, basically.
Yeah, South Africa and Namibia are headed that direction, if you look at it from,
because technically, as though that electorate of people are getting older, that voter, because that voter is now 60 and above.
Yeah.
Technically, that voter that says that statement, like you said, that voter is 60 and above now.
Yeah.
Today, they are 60 and above. Close to 60 and above.
You know that fatigue? There was a way that previous elections of Namibia for presidential and national assembly were displayed on the ECN website before it was updated.
Mm.
It was tabulated, and you can still find that information on the website for the statistics in voter turnout and how many people voted. For different election cycles, from 1990 all the way to the recently held.
Yeah, election. I found that. Yeah.
Yeah, and
the only thing I don't like is they didn't break it up into like age groups like the South Africans do.
So they break it in age groups.
No, the South Africans broke it can break it down for you in age groups. Yeah.
Now, one thing I find fascinating is that every time that a president comes into office, if you just look at the founding father, for example, you see that the first administration, the numbers are that high. Mm. The second term, the number seems to be dropping the longer the term goes.
Yeah.
And when a new guy comes into office, the number goes up.
Yeah.
And the longer the person stays in office, the number also goes down.
Goes down. Yeah.
What that is showing is that this is the same thing that you begin to see with political parties. Yeah. Now, if you look at the liberation movements, became political parties post-independence.
Mm.
Now, in the beginning of pretty much every country that you can look at on this continent, the liberation movement received a very large number of followers and reverence and respect. But with time, you see a lot of fragmentations.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the more fragmentations you see, the more the reduction in numbers and respect and reverence and more like looking up to the liberation movement associated political parties.
Mm.
And that's what we saw with Zambia, because that's what we saw with Zambia. For a very long time, Zambians voted only for the for the liberation struggle movement, for the political party that came out of the liberation struggle. And halfway through, now just with time, what they do? Well, they changed. Botswana did the exact same thing. And whether we like it or not, Botswana, Namibia and South Africa.
And Zimbabwe.
If you look at their elections, for example, their independence.
And Mozambique.
Yeah. Botswana got theirs, in the 1950s?
Yeah.
And Zambia didn't.
Botswana is alongside the oldest ones. From post-colonialism.
Yeah. When did Zambia get there? So this, 60s?
Zambia was before Botswana.
Before Botswana? Longer than that. So yeah. The thing is, political parties are going to change.
No. Botswana was still a protectorate under South Africa as well.
Botswana got there in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure about...
Because they were a protectorate even under the South Africans as well.
Mm-hmm.
But... It's a good thing you also cited that particular talking point, Helmut, because in the SADC landscape, it's three countries. It's Namibia, it's Zimbabwe, and it's South Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah. That still have, and Mozambique, four.
So that means in South Africa, it has only been ANC. And
up until almost now, this term where they have the GNU.
Exactly. Now, that GNU is an excellent example of... the collapse basically in trust and reverence in terms of a lot of people associating, that they really gave, just shortly after independence to liberation struggle movements that turned into political parties.
But the concern in South Africa was it was based upon racial lines because of Nkontuwe Siswe.
Yeah.
Nkontuwe Siswe literally positioned themselves as a political party for Zulu interests.
Now,
no one else.
So the main fragmentation was came out of Mkhonto Sizwe.
Yeah.
That Mkhonto Sizwe basically took a large chunk of the ANC members along
voter
with them.
Base, yes. Yeah. From KwaZulu-Natal and from other parts of that eastern South Africa. You come to Namibia.
That's a change in political landscape.
The fragmentation... Let's of the electorate base happened since 2018, 2019 when...
with the IPC.
No, when LPM
started. LPM.
LPM came about. And then the other party saw, okay, let's try and do what they are doing. And then the fragmentations fragmented further, Then
and
IPC came about. AR then went and registered as a political party, no longer as a social movement. And, then the fragment... Now...
The fragmentation is just going down the hill.
Yeah, so... Primarily what you see today, like in these parliaments across SADC, is you see that that voter that you mentioned, the I died for this country voter, that voter is getting older. That voter is dying. I'm sorry guys for putting it so morbid, but that voter, if you look at our census statistics of 2023, that voter from 60 up, literally from 60 up, is 200,000 people of this country.
Okay, this whole fragmentation and a lack of trust in the established or more like formally trusted political parties or individuals. Is something that is has been seen happening not just in Africa. Take for example, in the recent before Netanyahu took power in Israel as a prime minister, I think Israelis, those guys, I could feel pity for them. I think they went through three, four, or five elections in a span of 2 years.
Yeah,
not a single political party could, come up with the votes that constitutes a big enough majority to single-handedly run the government. Mm. So they had to form basically what South Africa is doing, this government of national unity of their own, which is how they ended up with who is this, their crazy national security minister.
Now, did you see what the guy did last month?
Of course he did something.
Do you know what's the worst part? The guy that I follow on YouTube is a British Swede, or he's half Swedish, half British. Don't ask me how that works, but he lives in the city of Birmingham in England, but he has heritage and family in Sweden. So his channel's name is Geopold, but he makes these comical satirical things, but it's all based on fact, but he just tries to show you the dots. Ben-Gavir of Israel ordered there was a bomb dropped on southern Lebanon recently.
Of course.
But it's apparently a bomb so powerful, it's a bunker buster bomb. It's on that level.
Look,
and no one reported of it.
When politicians are looking for power, they will do anything to acquire that power. Because look, the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he knew Ben-Gavir is unhinged. There was a
and Smotrich, the other guy.
Yeah, who is now the finance minister. Look, the thing is, Ben-Gavir was known to be very far from here to the moon and back, far right.
You heard most about his fanaticism with that guy that walked into a mosque and massacred praying people.
Yeah, but you know, Muslims are the problem. But look, the thing is,
true. Really, people. And this is what happened. And Helmut is showing that dilemma.
Yeah, look, he was so fringe. He was refused from doing mandatory military serving, which is something that they do in Israel. The same. Yeah, that's the same thing that South Korea does.
It's like a psychometric test they take of the person.
Yeah. He wasn't allowed to join them because they just looked at him and were like, you know what, we like mandatory, serving in this country, but this guy is not one of them. Yeah. So he went and started a political party. Now he's in parliament. Look at the decisions that have come out of it.
Mm.
Now, if you look at the U.S., for example, one of the biggest issues that the U.S. is having right now in terms of the Israeli, U.S. relations is that a lot of young people, looking at multi-directional political, they have the multi-directional political point of view.
Mm.
They just don't want to say, you know what, this is what my father and my grandfather did. I'll just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
So you have, it's one of the reasons why they had to buy TikTok, because a lot of young people are having, are not just following things because somebody said it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them have diverted in terms of where they get their news from mainstream media news to social media, because everywhere they look on mainstream media, 90% of the stuff they are being fed is not really a lie. It's narrative. It's hand-picked and well-crafted to push a certain point of view instead of telling the whole story. So you have a large number of youth now that are deviating from that way of consuming media to social media.
Yeah.
And they are getting this whole, you know what? This, we have been told a lot of things that is not true. There's one man that, he's an American, that made a few videos for his social media from Yemen.
Yeah.
He was walking around in a mall and showing them that, when I came to Yemen, I was told you'll be killed by terrorists. And he said, okay, now, in a sarcastic way, that just look at all these terrorists that are just seated there. They're having their food and they're doing their regular shopping. And they have a lot of interesting Western brands in there. I'm like, really?
Oh, they were also wearing the latest Nikes.
Okay. Aren't you guys supposed to be enemies? Like, what? That's why politics, don't listen to politics.
Yeah.
So, young people are going to, young people are taking the direction of, young people are taking a different direction in terms of their political point of view. which is what is causing a lot of shift in political spectrums in a lot of countries. And Namibia is not far.
No, Namibia is not far. But just before we take the break, I wanna add in something by your point also, Hamoud. The concern that and this is one of the reasons why I've also been hammering for the past like year and a half now on Namibians really have to look at the caliber of the politicians they voted for in the local authority yeah. and the regional authorities. Guys, you guys, look, I have my particular personal beef with what I experienced last year when none of the three people were people that I knew, were people who canvassed for a vote, were people who had a town hall meeting of any format or kind or whatever. But in many scenarios, you also have to ask the particular question. Are you doing justice to the activity? I know some of you probably might be a tenderpreneur who knows how to influence a result in your favor. That's you. That's for your benefit. And obviously this is an open and a fair race that is always put forward to everybody else to vote for. But at the heart of actually only understanding last year, Hamoud, that the National Council is the one that represents our voices and not the National Assembly. Why don't we vote for the National Council first before the national, the presidential and National Assembly elections?
Mm-hmm.
Because we now realize people keep talking to a wall or to a politician sitting in a lovely chamber, being seen on the national broadcaster, air conditioned and everything, getting a tax-free salary, but people don't know whether or not change is going to happen. But the National Council is the most important one, which helps you with your development agenda. The National Council represents your voice from wherever you stay in the country. The National Council is the one that actually goes and says, if a law is to be signed off, we need to see it first, and our people need to know about this law change. That's the National Council, guys. But before we continue, quickly going to take a quick break. Belvitje University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8. Master of Public Health, and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever.
So, security on the African continent.
I don't think it's a touchy issue, Hamoud.
No, it's not.
It's literally like a bar fight. Not Namibian bar fights or Shabin fights, please, guys. There are bottles flying there. I'm talking about the age-old, you know, a cowboy movie bar fight. You know, there's probably just one glass to be sacrificed and everything else is just, you know, actual fists, mano a mano, taking place. You know, you've got your left gun and your right gun doing the talking. No. The reason why, Hamoud, I use the shotgun wedding or the bar fight reference is Madagascar happened. Mozambique happened. We know that anything outside of DRC, on the other side of DRC, is in many aspects wild west of the
wild,
continent.
Wild,
wild. Wild, west. Truly wild. Where people believe you can have a wonderful idea, but you could be a threat to someone. No, I'm not scaremongering you guys. No, I'm not fearmongering you either. But also just understand, as Namibians, we are chill with each other. We can make it, we can anger each other, infuriate each other today, ne? Tomorrow you'll be fine, Hamoud. Tomorrow you'll talk to me.
Those guys will be taking...
Those guys will be making sure that today was the last day on this planet for you. So, for example, do you remember the story? I don't know if you remember the story,
mm-hmm.
but did you hear about the story of last year when What's the guy from South Sudan, the president?
South Sudan?
Yeah. Kiir, or oh, it has, he almost has like a similar name to Keir Starmer from the UK.
I can't believe that guy is former prime minister.
Saidu Kiir, or something like that, man. And I know the story I'm going to tell you might sound a bit nasty to any person out there, but...
What do you mean nasty? It's politics.
No, Helmut, no, because it's literally something, and I couldn't believe what I was watching on this video, but it's these things that some of these journalists on this one WhatsApp group love to do. They share with you a random video without context. Now you stand there, you know, and you sit there watching the video and like, okay, now what am I watching? Who am I watching? Why am I watching this? What's the context of this video?
Yeah.
And if you ask, no one responds. So, I just quickly want to get his name. South Sudan president. This guy, Helmut, this guy, last year, Salva Kiir. Yeah, that's the guy's name. So, Salva was standing. So, how it sometimes happens at like these official events, you've got, you know, you as the media person, you must now have to stand with your camera and you're recording a woman in front of the person.
Yeah.
So national anthems were playing here behind the camera person. I'm now indicating to our viewers and listeners. National anthem was playing. Music was coming from the back. Salva Kiir is standing here in front, standing up straight. Behind him is his bodyguard, his entourage. And he's just standing there, but standing, you know, obviously in honor to the national anthem and the flag. And then you just start seeing a darkening of his trouser here between his legs. And you see this puddle of liquid form at the bottom of his feet. Yes, happened in the video.
No,
I couldn't understand. Is this a new thing? Is this a bad thing? What am I watching?
It is a terrible thing, that's for sure. Is it new?
Do you know what happened to the cameraman that stood there looking at the man and recording the thing?
Yeah.
Homeboy disappeared. He disappeared. The cameraman disappeared. The cameraman disappeared, Ahmed. Now, what must you do?
I'm afraid to ask.
If your president is 100 years old, if your president at that stage, unfortunately, you can see needs to be put in a hospice for the elderly, what must you do, Helmut?
Elections. It's called elections.
But here's the thing. The vice president is also a warlord. Your president is also a former warlord. Your prime minister is a warlord. You guys made a contractual agreement to the UN and the UN Security Council not to shoot at each other. That's the whole reason you guys broke away from Sudan. And Sudan doesn't like you because you broke away from them. Now, Salva Kiir looks youthful, né, in the photos that I've got here in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
But the man is pretty old. Hamud. The man is ancient.
How old?
Born in 1951. He would have been two years younger. Yeah, he's 2 years younger than my mom. My mom would have been. Wait, how old is this guy? 1951. Yeah, he's literally now in his 70s. I mean, Donald Trump is close to his 80s, and Donald Trump hasn't done such ridiculous thing.
It's kind of difficult to defend Trump right now after saying the Islamic Republic of Japan.
Did you see that video?
You have got to be kidding.
No, I don't think anyone can defend Trump anymore.
Japanese and Muslims have taken that and they are flying with it on social media. Salam alaikum. Japanese are learning to pronounce salam alaikum.
No, but you know what's the worst part? The Japanese actually hate Muslims. The Japanese, like the politics on the ground. The Japanese don't want Muslims to their country.
Okay, there's one question I want to ask him. Remember when Biden referred to the president of Mexico as President El Sisi in reference to the president of Egypt? So this is the White House writing comedy.
This is America writing comedy. You should see.
Like,
you know what's the biggest fallout today?
What's that?
The biggest international relations fallout is Donald Trump's phone call to Infantino from FIFA
about, oh, the red
about, about the red gun.
Yeah.
Now, do you know what's the funniest?
And the Egypt Argentina game.
I'm not going to get there yet.
Yeah.
The other funny scenario is, a day after the red card that the American guy got, Balogun, the red card he got, an England defender also got a red card.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? Same action that Balogun did.
Same penalty.
No, not penalty, but yeah, same penalty with a red card.
In terms
of
punishment, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of punishment. But Balogun gets, his red card gets rescinded. The England guy has been told just yesterday,
have to follow the rules.
He is going to be suspended for 2 matches. That is if England win over the weekend, and if England wins the semi-final. So it's quarter-final, and if they win the semi-final, he will only be seen either for either third place, fourth place playoff,
yeah,
or for the final. For the exact same action. Helmut.
Why did that come as surprising, though?
Well, the surprising part was that people really didn't expect Donald Trump to actually make such a stupid move in the World Cup.
You know, one thing I came to realize that soccer fans held with revered and held to be very, 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 very true.
Mm.
And that's the bubble being busted right now.
Yeah.
And that is, politics doesn't belong in sports.
No, but that's what we Africans have been told.
Like you soccer fan guys believe that to be,
it's a sanctimonious process.
It's sanctity. This is just sports. Let's leave politics out of it because this is for
politics
everyone
takes place, let it take place in the boardrooms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except, that was held to be very true for an extended period of time. There were things going on in the background, but they were not at the size of rescinding the red card.
Not even Putin did this in his World Cup.
Yeah. Now, look at it this way. A lot of people were criticizing the hosting of the World Cup in Russia, and they did the same thing in Qatar.
And in Brazil.
Actually, right now they are realizing that the World Cup in Russia and the World Cup in Qatar, they were not bad.
They were actually better. And many people are even drawing comparisons to the 2014 one in Brazil.
Yeah. And now, the picture that we are seeing here is things started to take the direction of politics, the cracks of political activities within the field, within the sports realm. The politics began to bubble somewhat shortly after banning Russia in all the sports.
Yeah.
And let me just say months, if not just a year or two leading to the 2026 World Cup, people have been calling for the banning of Israel.
Mm.
And FIFA didn't do a thing.
Mm.
And that's when I realized, oh no. Soccer has gone political on this one.
Oh no, I want to give you the African injustice right now.
Please.
So, when this phone call situation happened.
The red card phone call.
Yeah. When this phone call situation happened and when the Belgians obviously decided to play football and they gave the Americans a lesson in actual professional football.
Yeah.
A convincing 4-1. I just sat there thinking to myself the day after looking at the highlights, and I was like, but Zimbabwe was banned from qualifying for this World Cup.
Yeah.
Because Zimbabwe would have been in Namibia's group with Tunisia.
Yeah.
Tunisia was the country that won in our group. I sat there thinking, Zimbabwe was banned from our group, from participating,
mm-hmm,
for a moral and for a ethical and for a benevolent purpose, Helmut. The purpose was, there were reports coming out in Zimbabwe that female refs, mm-hmm, and female football staff,
mm-hmm,
of the ZFA were being sexually harassed. the Zambian minister, the minister of sport, or what, Zimbabwean minister of sport, or someone, wanted to, literally told the Zambian FA, I am going to investigate you, because these are Zimbabweans,
mm-hmm.
who are you? These are fellow Zimbabweans who are complaining of your actions as the Zimbabwean FA.
Mm-hmm.
The Zimbabwean FA informs CAF and FIFA. Zimbabwe gets kicked out of qualifying. Hamoud, a crime is being committed in your country,
yeah.
by your own citizens,
yeah.
who represent the supranational entity known as FIFA.
Mm-hmm.
Through CAF, they represent FIFA. For those same people, basically, not to realize that they've got a legal... not legal. There's no legal duty. No, there is a legal duty. The Constitution. If you committed a crime,
yeah.
in the eyes of the Constitution of the country you are from, you are legally bound to either report yourself or, you know, to be prosecuted under those rules and laws.
Yeah.
For them to go and report to FIFA that they are going to be investigated for sexual harassment of female staff,
yeah.
is above and beyond me to understand. So a country that takes a moral position on FIFA officials who are Zimbabweans, is penalized for trying to do the right thing. And nothing happens to the US. But we must hope that Belgium needs to play a match. But nothing happens to the US. So now people are talking about actions and discussions of the upcoming FIFA elections that will take place next year in 2027.
Yeah.
I mean, it's things too far to try and punish Infantino. It's literally too far. And about discussions of what this looks like for the game in the US. But what does the game, what does this image look like for the game for a continent like Africa? Kenya was also kicked out or banned from competing, from qualifying, Helmut, because of also a similar kind of a threat. The Kenyan authorities, the ministry,
mm-hmm.
that is in charge of sport was trying to investigate something in the Kenyan Football Association. FIFA bans them from participating in qualifying. So the injustice is a discussion also one of, but the American president is literally saying that I called Infantino. We had a wonderful discussion.
That's one thing I like about Trump. He's terrible at hiding secrets.
Yeah. He just...
Yeah.
He just announces, I did this.
Look, it's a good thing Epstein invited him to his island before he reached this age that he is now. Because if it was if he was invited today, he would be telling everyone about all of it as soon as he arrives at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
I was invited, guys.
I just can't joke around the Epstein files. I mean, just
not now. But yeah, not now.
I mean, when kids are involved, count me out of that.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. What you are seeing happening with FIFA is the exact same thing that that the ICC has been criticized for.
Yeah.
Big countries with large economies with which ipso facto contributes the largest share in terms of funding to the running of the organization are really held accountable. Like, take the UN, for example.
Yeah.
The biggest causes of insecurity in terms of military conflict by backing up...
And you were confused when I asked you about, do you think we have a one-party state? Just read that line.
Oh, man.
Not out loud, but just for yourself.
Socialism with Namibia, okay. Socialism, huh? That's an interesting one. But look, the thing is, the biggest destabilizing factors in terms of not just political but armed conflict are the five UN Security Council members. These guys are involved, especially the French, the British, the Russians, the Americans. China, not much, but the Russians, the British, the Chinese, the Russians, the British, the Americans and the French, these guys are involved into all kinds of armed activities.
Yeah.
And they are the ones that are at the UN security, the permanent members. They're the big decision makers with veto power. Mm. And according to the UN Charter, you can't go to war unless that war is, you can't go to war unless that war is in self-defense.
Yeah.
And even if that war is in self-defense, in the middle of you defending yourselves, you have to notify the UN Security Council. Chances are very high. Take for example, if Syria was to notify the UN Security Council about defending themselves from the militias that was armed by the Americans under Operation Timber Sycamore, how does that even work? Because I'm notifying a group where one of the guys one of the guys that I'm accusing has veto power on that very decision make, the biggest decision making body in the UN. It's nuts.
It's counterproductive. It's frustrating.
It is frustrating. Now you see why people just wake up with their own, military, regalia and decide to dissolve the constitution.
And decide, you know what? I've got a wonderful idea here. I'm taking charge of the oil. I'm selling directly to the same people we've been selling to, who've been trying to replace me.
Now, look at security from an African standpoint. I know that the Institute of Security Study zones in a little bit more, among other things, on the, the structure that Africa has in place in terms of ensuring security on the continent.
Yeah.
And two, how to finance that structure in a way that it's not just a bunch of fancy Oxford English words on the, on a piece of paper. But there's another component being looked, that's not, looked at properly here. Haven't we learned anything from World War One? World War One was a family dispute.
Yes.
And we have a bunch of African countries that have family members scattered across SOEs and ministries.
Yes.
And now you have, knees, uncles and cousins overthrowing themselves out of power. I know that a lot of reason, one of the main reason why a lot of politicians like to have their family members in close proximity in terms of power is to ensure that there is no instability. But that's the entire Game of Thrones is based on family members backstabbing each other for money and power.
People who are related to each other. It's even a discussion, Helmut, about the reason why we get taught history. Now, I'm not trying to preempt potentially Uncle Bona by calling now, but Uncle Bona knows that we like history. But
yeah. I think he's the one calling.
Okay, let's have him on. Let's have him on.
Eagle FM, good evening.
Hey, good evening. How are you, Nancy?
Where are you?
Good night, Nancy. Morogeni. This is not the time to say Morogeni.
No, Morogeni applies morning, afternoon, and evening. Morogeni is just fine.
So Morogeni is not just like, how are you?
Morogeni is... Morogeni, you can just translate it as how are you, but I can't... But it has a different translation that I can't find in English.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be just how are you. It could be Moroccani. I think it go beyond that.
Yeah.
Unlike when you say who had it, or how are you?
Yeah.
Or does it imply just like that? Not like in Oshawamba you say, Matagrapotate, or Matagrapomime, or Matagrapotate Guru. Morning you have a different, the afternoon different, evening the same apply.
Moroccani is can be used at you know, it's like Hamoroke, that's the Thimpukushi one. Moroccani, that's Rukwangari. But we have separate you know, we have separate terms for morning, afternoon, and evening. It's just that the direct translation, like the equivalent of Moroccani or Hamoroke in English, is one that I can put my my mind on. But I can say it translates to good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Let me hear your mind on that.
Skip a hop and a jump away from Thimbukushu literature, and now Dwight is lost. Hey, so Dwight, let's come back to security.
Dwight, is Dwight not there?
He's here.
Bona.
You mean he's so good? No, you're pregnant, Moso. What do you call me? What does practice mean?
I'm just not listening to the Moroccaniness, Uncle Bona.
I even mentioned Moroccani, Ukandet, how are you? So which one is your take there?
For Moroccani or Ukandet?
Just Ukandet. Because see, I can always, I know in Africans, you can say, Kwe more men here, Kwe more, Kwe more mefro, Kwe more. Or Guten Tafta. And you know, you understand. But I cannot just say who handed. I can say who handed. Maybe casual.
DK.
Yeah.
The equivalent of Moroccani would be, you know, it's basically like saying greetings. It literally translates to greetings.
Yes.
So you can use it morning, afternoon, if it's just the greetings. Greetings.
I know it's greeting. It means greeting. Moroccani.
Yeah.
Moroccani nani. Ngapi. Oh, maybe you can just say ngapi, maybe means now, how are you?
Yeah.
Oh, Moroccani mama, yeah. Because I always hear people saying, when they are referring to elders, they speak to Moroccani, Moroccani. Okay, so which you say, Dwight said, so it's you say it's only one party system in Namibia. So one person. The multi-party system of democracy that is there. We all believe that it's the one that is guiding us when it comes to our governance system, issue of democracy, constitutional democracy. So, but you are saying it's only one party system. Is it because of the support that has been winning elections, perhaps because of the trust the masses have? Not that they don't have.
Yes, Angubona, you are right. You are right.
I just want to understand. I just want to understand your reasoning.
Let me explain it like this, Angubona. Think of it like a sports team that just wins all the time. And then you ask yourself the question, so what's the caliber of the other participants in this fight or in this race or in this competition? Because in essence, Namibia is starting to look like a one-party state. I'm not taking the wins away, Angabona. Court cases aside, speak to one thing, but everyone trusted to participate in the race or in the competition, and then we see the results afterwards. The court cases come after the results, so I'm not gonna get into that realm. But you see that the race has been won, and then you know, okay, this is the state of affairs. This guy has been victorious for so long, so obviously. Much of the interest, much of the influence, much of the donations are obviously going to be bigger chunks to that particular racehorse or that particular competitor.
Helmut, what is your take, Helmut? Before I conclude with the response to my colleague there, I understand because you are all given a fair ground to do that, isn't it? But yeah. If there are dictatorial kind of dictatorship in terms of leadership, And you see that, yes, maybe these ones, they are bulldozing others. But I'm just telling you because, for example, if you are to appoint cadres based on the merits, looking at their credential and all these other things, eh? Of course, the vetting is there. Whether you are from whoever, doesn't matter. Because we all belong to, you know, we all, most of the time we are associated with others, through friends, family, and all these other things. But I'm not talking about the conflict of interest here. You understand? Mm-hmm. Because if you can just say, because yes, you are in opposition, I understand. Your contribution is also towards the good governance system and all this, you know, system that we are talking about. Especially when it comes to public policies and laws. So because most of the things, if they are done in accordance to the rule of law, then what's so difficult to appoint even somebody, whether you are from DTA or ADD or whoever, I'm just mentioning a swapper. So those people, they shouldn't have a room in Namibia to save their country or their institution.
But they do, right?
But the people are saying, yeah, the people are walking out of parliament.
Angamona, don't look at it like the parliament. Look at just the election result. Because the parliament is now like a national platform where those that participated in the elections and they got the most votes are going to go have their debates and stuff. I'm just looking at the elections. Just the elections. What? I'm not even looking at ministers. Because if you look at a track record of who has won, the entity that has won gets to make decisions about the direction that Namibia has to go. So when you look at that for 35, 36 years, with still the same result every elections, this technically means we've become a one-party state.
No, it's not one-party state. Maybe just, you see, they're popular. The masses. Because me, that's why I believe in the masses, the people.
Yeah.
And how the value judgment and all these other things are being complied and, you know, adhered to. Because even those ones who are not getting there, like you said, but we are also funding them. We are all funding them. They get the platform. They can make money. They can also do other things, especially when it's come to apathy. What is it? The one that you call apathy, election apathy. What do you call it? Voter apathy. The voters. So now, is it that they cannot really perhaps demonstrate their mission, their vision? The aspiration, the people, the Namibian aspirations and the interests, they are there. And they really want to be saved, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that, and you strongly convince, and people are, they believe in your philosophy, whether it's of Ubuntu or whatever, whose problem is that?
Yeah.
Can that be blamed now to the party that is winning the election? Or is what? No, I just want to understand the democracy.
I think let's just give you guys the win. You are, according to Trump, you know, you are winning so much, you are tired of winning. Can we bring this discussion to?
But for Trump, please leave me alone. I know one Trump.
we are winning so much, we are tired of winning. So can we come back to can we just wrap things up with the African security in terms of armed conflict on the African continent from the African Union standpoint?
My brother.
Yeah.
I don't know you guys. I thank God for my mentors. People like you. You have demonstrated that yes, our security cluster. It is not only security cluster, because these are all integrated kind of system that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that the criminal justice system is not frustrated by those who might want to corrupt themselves. And I think Madlanga and all those inquiries that have been going on there,
yeah,
they are a good lesson also to learn. And even in terms of managing immigration, not that because you now take the law into your own, from your own hand, and you're going to harass people in the street. Is that what you want, people?
No.
Yes, I know there are also a lot of whites who came in South Africa during those things. Maybe for them they got some document and things like that, but they are there. But the way you are demonstrating that unity, solidarity, maybe it is a way of raising awareness, but in violence and violence and abuse, human rights, and all these instruments and things like that.
Yeah.
Trump, maybe it's also good to doing this because he said already that nobody knows, most, even though those your institution, the court, International Court of Justice, you have no jurisdiction over him.
Yeah, they are not signatory to the Rome Statute.
So we are not talking about the Rome Statute, we are talking about the natural law. So not about Rome statutory that you always argue about. No.
But to be prosecuted by the ICC, you need to be a signatory.
Yes,
otherwise,
you are using a law that was not properly discovered from the natural law, and therefore, it is one of the impeachment of the natural law of the justice system. So I understand we are prescribed to that. And sometimes, that's why sometimes we are different in many other ways. And from the Roman Dutch law, the English and all these things, I understand their influence and all these other things. But we know that these things is inhuman. Why do you say the Roman and what? The Roman things were good because they came from there.
I never really thought of it that way until you brought it up, but I think our biggest mistake was adopting laws from the Romans. Of all people who could have adopted laws from the Romans, that was one dumb mistake.
Yeah, it's true. So, Dwight, what's your conclusion? Dwight.
Uncle Bona, I'm here, I'm listening.
Pratnet must, oh. You need to quiet me, man. Pratnet, why? How come you need Pratnet?
Commercial break, hey, come.
Then you are concluded.
Yeah.
Then you conclude with the Dwight.
All right.
Good.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kg of Surf hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750 ml Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Welcome back. We have 15 minutes before the hour of 7. That will bring us to the end of Home Run. So that means until then, we still have 15 minutes to go. So let's see if we can take another call. Eagle FM, good evening.
Sorry, I just wanted to conclude with Dwight. I don't know because you have spoken a lot now. Dwight.
Anubona.
What is your conclusion, please? Is some recommendation or advice or whatever?
Okay, Angabona, okay, in relation to the topic we've had since 4 right now, it's based upon Namibia is peaceful, Namibia is stable. We know these facts. These are the wins for us. We know that Namibia is such a good school kid in high school. We are doing all our assignments. We are submitting reports to the Africa peer review mechanism. We are submitting things left, right, and center to the UN agencies. We are just the best model student. However, In the realm of what was I remember this from a Big Brother Africa, the first Big Brother Africa season that happened, and there was a Botswanan guy, a short guy, he's probably shorter than me. He was arguing with a Zambian guy, and the Zambian guy was asking him, "How many parties do you have in your country?" And the Botswana guy said, and they're literally like us. Yeah, they've got a whole bunch of parties. And, you know, like more than 10.
And Zambia, Botswana.
And that was at at that time, it was 2009, 2010. And the Zambian guy was like making fun of the Botswana guy for having so many, his country having so many parties. And then the Botswana guy asked him, "How many parties do you have?" And he said, "No, we only have 5. And then the Botswana guy was like, "So out of the that large population, you guys could only decide on 5.
Five
to basically achieve your political plurality discussion, you know, to exercise democracy to the fullest." Now, it's a scenario like that, Angabona, that anyone has the, obviously the right to open up a party. It doesn't matter at what stage of life you find yourself, whether you're young, whether you're old. The concern at the current level that I wanted to cite when I asked Helmut the question in terms of when you think about it in reality, Namibia is starting to look like a one-party state because you can basically see that the other parties don't have a plan. And don't worry.
Other parties are going to Madai after this.
They can come and find me. They know where our address is. We've interviewed some of them. The concern is, if you don't have a plan, in the modern age of communication with technology, with all the other stuff, the downside is, I mean, you will continue, the same competitor, the same racehorse will continue winning every round, every fight, every competition cycle. There's nothing that can be done. So in many cases, it then also forces Angabona, and this is the other threat to Namibia's participatory democracy, is that voters will stay away and they won't participate because they see this scenario is just not beneficial for them.
I understand, my brother. Yes, let's promote this young democracy. So we promote and we make sure that they participate. And of course, we expect them to, everybody to do better. And when it comes to some of this national issue, national concern, we need also to be serious and put our differences to, so we meet tomorrow, next week.
All right.
Guys, so thank you very much for the program. I'm very happy that you contacted the program.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Look, guys, when you go think about, don't be shy to talk about, you know, what you see happening in the Namibian political landscape.
Yeah.
And how you feel, what issues are brought to the National Assembly and the National Council for discussions. The only thing you need to be worried about is, do these decisions that take place at these platforms that I mentioned actually materialize in actual benefits and actual development on the ground for you? Like what many of the ministers back in the previous administration were citing, trickle-down economics, without actually saying trickle-down economics. And I was standing there, are you saying trickle-down economics without saying it? Really?
So they're beating around the bush.
They technically were, yes. Another dimension, obviously, that we've got to look out for is, let's, for example, say in this peace and stability discussion. Nah? Namibia has to start investing, unfortunately, a lot more in immigration and in safety and security. Not in the army. The army will always get their way to get their budgets to do their things. I'm talking about police, immigration, border control, and the likes. Helmut, Namibia, we potentially can face like an influx of other Africans that might show up here, and then we might end up with an Operation Dudula or a March and March headache 5 years from now, because yes, there will be some sort of an internal continental migration.
taking place.
Yeah.
There is obviously great mysticism to us. There's a mystery to us, which only the European tourist, the North American tourist, the South African tourist, and the Angolan tourist, and the immediate fellow SADC neighbors to us know about Namibia.
Yeah.
But visitors from Ghana, from Nigeria, from even Egypt, Khutasha, the North Africans, the East Africans, those guys will come to Namibia and they will realize this is a country of 3 million. Let me come and settle down here and live life to the fullest of the fullest of the fullest. And then you like, more of these guys start showing up.
You know how the one thing that I find fascinating about the future of the discussion of immigration or migration?
Yeah.
I'm like cross-border travels.
As long as it doesn't involve Palantir, please.
No, it doesn't involve Palantir. It's okay. Just the pure social observation that I have observed.
Yeah.
There is a lot of interracial, intercultural, and international marriages taking place.
In Namibia?
Just across the world.
Yeah.
Now, one thing that we're going to see is that
and
by...
That's because of tourism.
By 2050, now we bring up Gambia. You see, by 2050, I love that country.
That is for the wrong reason. That's Gambia, Kenya. There's another country. Gambia, Kenya, Tanzania.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You were saying?
Yeah. So I think the discussion of illegal immigration or more like just the nationality as a whole is going to, the definition of a nationality is going to change a lot with, as a lot of people basically begin to have, ancestry and nationalities in terms of in terms of their parents.
Mm.
Yeah. Take for example Helmut finds himself married to a woman from a Zimbabwean or Zambian or someone from Botswana. And obviously that will that is going to bring up a lot of I will have a lot of explaining to do to my children in terms of which country is theirs.
Mm.
Yeah, is it the one that they will be documented into, because or the ones that are going to be born into, or do they get to adopt double citizenship? And that is if the immigration laws of both countries allows for that. And that's why I think in the next 10, 20, 30 years, we're going to start talking about nationality and immigration from an Israeli perspective, because a lot of Israelis have other nationalities like Australia, UK, France, the Americans. So
South Africans.
Exactly, South Africans. That type of dual citizenship is something that
German as well.
Yes, that's something that is going to happen a lot, because I'm saying this because of the number, because of there's a lot of political openness in terms of intercultural, racial, and tribal intimate relationships, which is leading us into a generation of multinational multinational in terms of nationality type of children. And very soon we'll start having a discussion of, okay, now if a Namibian marries someone from Botswana,
what's the legal?
Yeah, what is the legal status? Is it where they are born? I know that these things have already taken place, but I don't think they have reached a time, more like a level where they have generated more like a whole topic on its own in terms of this is a whole group that has grown, large enough for us to start looking at their authentic identity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, which I think for Namibia and Botswana, at least travel-wise, it's going to be much easier if seeing that we already we have reached a point where we want to make the traveling between two countries very flexible, to the point where we don't need passports.
Mm.
For the Africa Continental Free Trade Area, I know one Namibian who is married. One Namibian who is married to a Nigerian, and I know a Namibian who is married to a Canadian, and that Canadian was born in Canada, but the parents are originally from Zimbabwe.
Mm.
So you have all these you know, you have a lot of you have this old jungle up connection that that is happening in terms of where someone is really from. And with time, I think, and as we can see with immigrations, and immigrations is taking place left, right, and center. Yeah, with immigrations, you are going to see that. And I think one thing that we saw with the Miss South Africa pageant is one of those negative, more like one of those discussions that we are going to be forced to have.
Yeah.
You have now you have someone who was born in South Africa, but you know, from a Mozambican mother and a Nigerian father.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when it comes to her participating into initiatives that were taking place in her country of birth, the whole country went nuts.
But Hamad, and that's one of the things why what's happening in South Africa doesn't make sense to any African.
Much
and the Operation Dudulas. I will always mention Operation Dudula because it doesn't it's not like that thing went away.
No, it didn't.
It's still there. The concern is when the South Africans are complaining, the ones that march, to us, the rest of the world, we're like, what? You're only chasing out one skin color of a person? You're not reacting to the other people?
No, they don't get, look, that's the ridiculousness of this whole thing.
Yeah, which is actually the whole scenario being like, okay, so you're being selective in your immigration, anti-immigration policy?
You know, for someone who just a few decades ago emerged out of apartheid, which is a categorization of individual based on skin color and ethnic groups and all that.
Yeah.
You complaining about all those divisions and categorizations and then turning around and doing the exact same thing on, and I'm just going, okay, you know what?
Which basically means that South Africans didn't read their own history.
No, they didn't.
They literally didn't. But yeah,
I've come across a lot of South Africans that are asking the exact same questions that you and I are asking, and there are a lot of basically Africans, including Europeans. And this is one thing. Now you have South African. I mean, you have white South Africans that are asking the exact same question. That so when you say immigrants must leave. You only mean black people, don't you? And last time I checked, you're black, and there are immigrants that are white. So if your definition
there are immigrants
of
immigrants that are brown,
that are they, from you know
India,
that are
Pakistan,
exactly all those
from China, from Japan, you name it.
But they don't fall under the category of immigrants must go. Immigrants must go.
They are thinking about Zimbabweans, Nigerians, Ghanaians. Mozambicans.
But you don't like apartheid.
Burundians, yes. But you're practicing apartheid.
Yeah.
That's why this thing doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. No
matter how, even the face, when the face was put to the thing, and I was shocked that it sounds very similar to a Radio Rwanda.
Esira shisho, pagyotari kukwathere opoguro kara uasira ya kweni ochisho. Waduchi ithana basic mental health first aid course. Haiganjua oshari chamhongi kwa mboka ili iyo yo NHP. Watapewa unongo nonseo na kene una okutongorora omadidiriko ugopetameko ugenasha nupiakadhi nenge omathidakano opamadhiradiro kuchane omokatiko kumekoe nenge anironga pamwe nangoe osho otopewa unongo ngene una okuya kwathera nokuya pa eabidido yiri monjira omanga upya kadiboka inauru darara kuyerere ounji na ngene unokana uishangitha tarira po epanja yao yo nhp.com.na e pangono maradura sano odovina okurandurwa NHP rooted in care for you
your health, your life, your peace of mind.